cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the practical business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi, Richard. I'm super excited about today's show.
Great. Last week, we spoke to Mitch Brigando, a Discovery accredited wealth builder. Today, we're speaking to Zandile Nzalu, founder and CEO of Zanenza. I got that right? Yep.
Absolutely.
So, tell us a little bit about Zanenza and what you do, what the company's all about. Tell us about your baby.
Oh, this baby. Our baby just is turning 15 this year. So we were established way back in 2002 as primarily a PR agency. And over the years, we added a few more offerings such as event management, and well, as well as fundraising. And most recently, I think like 2014, we added a very kind of like new dimension, which was one of the biggest investments we've had to make, you know, regarding the company. And that was a Deco Hire division. So we had to relocate. We are located now at Deco Park. We have a warehouse and we supply events for functions such as weddings, corporate gala dinners, launches, you name it. And we also then, you know, we coordinate the events on their behalf. So that's the one part of the business, which is the original Zanenza. Recently, we launched a new company, which is called Z Consulting. And this is an advisory services entity that focuses on enterprise supply development for corporate, state-owned enterprises, as well as government.
You're all about connection.
Absolutely. It's all about the networks. We have a very rich network, and I think it dates back to so many years, and the industry and media, radio, television. So we've been very good at ensuring that we keep these relationships going from the tea lady all the way to the CEO.
When we've seen evidence of that this morning here in the studio. Yeah. I must say, my one comment would be, and I was going to say to us, give us your background from your early life in Swaziland. You were born in Swaziland.
Oh, I'm so delighted to be able to say this. I had the happiest childhood. Okay. I was just a happy little baby, a happy trooper, and I had a very supportive family. So there was four of us in the family. I'm the last born, and I, you know, later I feel like I'm the eldest because, you know, you just grow up so quickly. But living in Swaziland, we had a very, very free play time was the best time. Holiday time was great, and my dad was very strict when it comes to education, and he would ensure that we each get a library book every day, or rather every Monday, and then we'd be given 3 days to read the book and come back and tell him the story. But he was a cheat, I have to confess. Here's what he'd do. He would ensure that one of us, of the four, would pick his favorite book, which was The Drummer Boy. And so every week somebody had the painful task of narrating The Drummer Boy all over again. And we just knew that was his favorite. So, but it really helped in terms of getting us to read and focusing on our education. And I just remember some examples and little incidents where my dad would really just dupe us into thinking we're going on a joyride. Like, come on, everybody get in the car. Off we go. So we'd get into this car all excited. And we think, oh, we wonder where we're going. It must be a fabulous treat that we're going to. And then we just park the car on the side of the road. And at that time, we lived in a sugar plantation village, Simunye. And what would happen seasonally, obviously, once the sugar cane is grown and high enough, they would burn it. But once it's been burnt, they would need human beings to come with a sickle to actually just chop it all down. I don't know if the system has changed from manual to being more, you know, perhaps machinery has taken over. But he would then stop. I remember this one time he stopped and he said, get out. And we're like, oh, okay, we're going to get sugarcane. He's like, no. And then he says, what's happening here? And we said, they're chopping down the sugarcane. He says, why are they chopping the sugarcane? And we say, well, because it's going to be turned into sugar. And he says, oh, okay. And what about the people chopping the sugarcane? Do you think they're enjoying it? And by then, these, you know, cutters have actually become totally black from all the soot because it becomes, you know what happens when you burn stuff. And then he said, well, now get back into the car. And we got back into the car and he said, now this is what happens when you don't go to school. You will end up right here chopping sugarcane for the rest of your lives. This is what your life is going to amount to. So when I tell you to study and go to school and focus on your work, what I mean is for you to really understand the importance of education so you can have a better life. And that is the end of the joyride. Oh, it didn't make much sense then. We're actually quite annoyed. But in later years, I began to realize that that was quite a lesson. I never forgot that.
Well, I've just recently had the privilege. In fact, I did a piece of consulting work with Royal Swazi Sugar in Simunye.
Oh, my goodness.
See, more connection.
What a small world we live in.
And, yeah, so...
I grew up there.
Okay. So, I think, you know that whole concept of understanding that life is beyond the little village of
Simunye.
That really does change your perspective.
Mm.
And yeah, I think, you know, if more parents in the world were doing what your father did in terms of creating that perspective of, let's call it the global village, as opposed to our little village, I think the world would be in a very different space. So you came up from Swaziland, you came to Johannesburg. Your voice has been heard by many people. I know we were talking briefly earlier. You have had a stint on many radio spaces and public relations spaces. I mean, what has been the thing that's motivated you over the years as an entrepreneur and as a business person? You've clearly found your niche. I look at your passion and your energy. You've clearly connected with the thing that makes your energy work for you.
I think before you answer that, I also want to know, why don't you just have a job? Why can't you throw it all into one conversation?
Why don't I have a job? Because, you know, a job, you know, just the term job sounds like something you should dread. So I have a life. I have a life. I wake up to the most amazing experience every day, which is to see Zanenza grow and evolve. Mm. And what keeps me going is one of the key things that would continuously influence me is the ability to grow and develop young people. And I'm very passionate about young people. So I love to see them grow into these amazing professionals. Some of them have gone on to work for other TV stations. Others are working for major corporates. Others, you know, are running their own show kind of stuff in terms of their own businesses. So I am motivated by the potential I see in this country of how far young people can go given a chance. And I have given many young people an opportunity. And I think it goes to the story or the issue of why I started Find Your Fire, which is a youth NPO, which at the time when I started it, most people were just like going, oh my goodness, why do you have to have an NPO when you still need to make money for yourself? I remember one very well-established businessman, he said to me, my darling, don't you know the work of philanthropy is for rich people? And I said, well, I don't have to wait until I have a whole lot of money to start something to, you know, that will make a difference in other people's lives. So if I can do it now, I'll do it now. But of course, what also keeps me motivated is results. I'm results driven. I like to be able to see things come through, you know. So I'm like a friend of mine once said to me, you're like a little chihuahua, you know. When a chihuahua gets hold of something, it doesn't let go until it's over. So I don't give up. Once I've set a goal, I don't give up until I see it realized. And so it's pretty much like saying, if I'm going to run a race, I don't come back without the prize.
Okay.
So if I can't come back with the prize, I shouldn't come back. And I related to how I landed in Joburg on the back of a truck with a duvet, a pillowcase, and a suitcase because my ride broke down and I had a choice to either go back home to Swaziland and restart the journey all over again. And I was headed to Radio Bob to start my career on a radio station as a DJ. And I plucked up the courage. I stood on the side of the road on a highway and Mr. Fenter's car couldn't continue. The guy had given me a ride.
Mm.
And a truck stopped and the guy said, hop in at the back. And I thought, back of a truck. I was like, okay, I know where I'm going. If I just focus on my destination, I will get there. And lo and behold, it dropped me right in the middle of Bree Street. So there I was, you know, trying to figure out what to carry when you know that whole situation. Yeah. You've got too many bags and you just need to keep moving.
Yeah.
And you're in a strange town and the bright lights in the city and there's traffic. And you're just this village girl from Simunye trying to make a living in Joburg. So, I mean, I look back at that and I know why I continued on the journey. It's because I had a goal in mind. Mm. And so, you know, without a goal, we're basically, we're lost in life.
Such a beautiful metaphor for, I suppose, many different challenges you've come across.
Many.
In life. Yeah.
So, I mean, you've reinvented yourself a few times along the way as you've adapted to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
What is what has been the thing that's driven that progression and that, let me call it, incremental change for you as a person? I mean, there's passion, there's energy. I can see it, we can see it and hear all of that. But passion and energy alone don't allow one to take the steps that one needs to, as one almost reinvents, adapts, changes, and moves forward. I mean, you know, it's very easy to adapt, change, and fall off the cliff.
Right.
So you've clearly moved forward in your thinking and the way you've approached life and the successes you've had. What has been that, let me call it, that key ingredient for you?
I would want to say survival, but I think survival is so cliche because then that means you're really desperate to stay in that position. Mm. But it's one thing that keeps me evolving is realizing that I am on this planet not just to exist for self, but I have a greater purpose. Mm. And when I made peace with that purpose, everything else fell into place. And the purpose is to work with young people. So everything else that I do ultimately points to in that direction, including this very new consultancy that we've established. Mm. We're focusing on youth enterprise development. And that's been one element of my life that just keeps me motivated when I see how far they can go in their lives and seeing them mature over the years. But also what keeps me alive is understanding that within any business you need to diversify. And we were talking about, you know, the highs and the lows of business, and one of the lowest lows of my life was that 2009-2011 period, and there was this hype over the FIFA World Cup, the great opportunities coming, most entrepreneurs in South Africa would benefit, and sadly, I didn't, like many other people. Mm. It wasn't really an absolute boom for us, especially in the industry, because we're going through the economic slump. And guess what? You know, budgets were cut, especially marketing. Communications, as you would know, those are the areas that would suffer the most and first and foremost. So I sat there and I lost out on a major contract. Mm. And then there were challenges with payment. And then I realized that, young lady, you've actually got all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And because this is shifting, your whole world is beginning to feel like it's crumbling. So I had to work on getting myself back on my feet one more time and ensuring that when I recover, my recovery plan also includes a new plan.
Yeah.
So I didn't recover to go back into the same position I was in. I, first of all, had to redress all those, you know, shortfalls in terms of credit and everything else, pay all the debt that I was now owing, the rental. And I had an amazing landlord. I mean, this wonderful man, when I moved into that office building, he said to me, I know that business can be difficult. And I can see you're young. I was probably, no, maybe I was, what, must have been back in 2006 or 2005. And he said, you're going to have some low times in your business. And when you do and you can't afford to pay rent, don't hesitate to let me know. Just don't hide from me, because it's people like people. When people hide from us, we put padlocks on their doors, right? And that shouldn't happen to you. And so I thought, oh, that's never going to happen to me. I'm just going to be soaring. I will be, you know, I'm going to just make it big. And then this thing happened, and this dark cloud descended upon me, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's really happening. I skipped month one, month two. Then I had to go and sit with Theo. So, Theo, it's happening. He said, okay, I'm glad you've come to speak to me about it. Now, what are your plans? How do you plan to recover? And I gave him my whole recovery plan. What are your projects? Very understanding, almost like a father figure to me. And there came a time, believe it or not, where I owed 120,000 rands worth of rental, and I was still in the building. My electricity was still on. And he kept saying to me, keep on pushing. You'll make it back. You are going to regain your ground, and don't worry, because it's going to be okay. And I just kept focusing on that. And as soon as I recovered, obviously, I started repaying all of that. And then I looked at a new business model. But I also was very careful not to go for something too foreign that I was going to have to learn from the very beginning.
Mm.
And I looked at events management. And I thought, you know, I don't particularly like doing events because it seems like just glorified waitressing and all of that. And then the margins are so low. So how about I begin to own the value chain? And that's when I came up with the concept of ensuring that we own the value chain by having the stock. So we supply events, you know, the wedding coordinators, we've got the furniture, the decor, we've got the couches, whatever setting you require, we can put that together for you. It was a big leap of faith, because it meant that I needed to travel to understand, you know, where I would find the best supplies. And once I found that, obviously traveled into those areas, did some local manufacturing of some of the items, and then built the business to that extent. So that meant we were now moving out of Theo's space. Now Theo was a darling. So you moved into a new space. And from that then began to look at other opportunities, because I was not feeling comfortable with the idea of diversifying, because it is a little uncomfortable at first, because it's, there are no guarantees. I mean, that's what entrepreneurs are. They're just crazy. We take chances, a leap of faith, and you don't know if you're gonna, you know, hit the ground running, if you're gonna roll over, if you're gonna curl up and die. You just pray that you've got all the right knowledge and you're equipped with the right experience to be able to do that. And I had established a good relationship with the Viacom group of companies. I'm not sure if I can actually just mention, those entities, but none of them in the radio space nonetheless. So I had worked with the Viacom group, working on the MTV Base brand, and soon realized that there was an opportunity in which I could assist them to revive the MTV Africa Music Awards.
Okay.
So I approached them and said, look, I could assist. We need funding. It hadn't been, rolled out for a while. I think there was a lull between 2009 and 2011. So we're able, through our networks, to be able to fundraise on their behalf, and got sponsorship for the brand. And so in 2013, there was the Africa All-Stars held in KZN. And then 2014, 2015, the Mamas came back to life. And then we began to grow that fundraising division.
Mm.
Now we also fundraise for iconic properties. And I must say that we don't fundraise for everything and anything. I'm very selective, and I look at the property, and I want to understand if I can really identify with it and its purpose and how it seeks to actually, you know, even improve lives, if that can be said, because there's also quite a bit of developmental work that happens behind the scenes at the awards ceremony. But interestingly, we also work with the Robben Island Museum, and we're in the process of adding a little bit more funding for the rehabilitation and memorialization of the island.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there's lots of big words that they use. So basically what we're doing is to help
putting it on the map.
Yeah. No, but it is a World Heritage site already, but it's about making sure that it is revived and refined to its former glory, because it isn't what it used to be. And it's been an exciting project working with curators. And yeah, that's also landed us another opportunity within the fundraising space for a museum locally. And so opportunities just keep on coming when you are attuned, when your mind is right and it's in the right space.
So talking about the mind, it sounds like you're constantly learning new things. You're constantly introducing yourself to new concepts, and it also sounds like you're constantly taking advantage of opportunities. Not just taking advantage of them, but also scoping them out and then pouncing on them.
Right.
Who do you have to be able to do those things?
You have to be yourself.
Okay.
You have to know what you want. Look, I do look at as success as a measure of perhaps my being on this planet, to say what is the measure of my success. Is money what's going to make me happy, or is it having a happy family that's going to make me happy, or is it having a massive business or building an empire? I think when I sit down and I think of all those things, I realize that the measure of my success I want to be at a point in my life where I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to worry about my health, or I don't have to worry about my wealth. I don't have to worry about my children's well-being, because all of it is in the right place. But I also appreciate the fact that money is an enabler. And for the type of lifestyle I want to live, I need to work for it, because it's not just going to land as a huge big blessing from up above. There's a lot of work that needs to go into that. So who do you have to be able to do what I do? I believe you need to get to a place in your life where you appreciate and accept yourself for who you are.
Okay.
And you stop dreaming other people's dreams on their behalf, because you've got your own purpose and your own destiny. And once you carve that and you're at peace with it, whatever it is, it could be at entry level, it could be at zero base, but allow yourself to start somewhere, because you have a bigger picture, and don't give up on that. And I look back at how in the very beginning when I started Zanenza, I didn't have a PA, but I'd come out of the Mnet Channel O space, where I'd helped to set up the first 24-hour music TV station for Africa. And I was pretty spoiled as an executive. I flew business class. I traveled all over the world. And suddenly, I was starting a business in my backyard, in a cottage, without a PA.
No PA. economy, budget economy.
Absolutely.
In fact, you're sitting, if you could, you would sit on the jump seat.
Exactly. Making my own tea. And I was my own PA, so I had this telephone that was also a fax machine. I'm sure if you guys are old enough,
that's
you remember.
A long time ago.
So I would actually, the phone would ring, and I'd answer it, and I'd go, Zanenza Communications, hello. And the person would say, may I speak to Zanile? And I'd say, oh, please do hold. And then I'd put the phone down, and then I'd come back with a different voice and say, Zanile speaking, how may I help you? And so, of course, you have to also laugh at yourself. You must be able to laugh at yourself. Even in those early days when it seems a lot tougher, just the ability to exhale and say, well, you know what, kid, you're not doing badly. You're starting on something that's good, but you're just going to get better and you're going to be good at what you're doing. But don't be too hard on yourself and don't lose sight of your goals.
Now, what I want to ask you is, with all this energy, passion, capability that I'm seeing, you've really grown your business over the last 15 odd years. We are now in a space economically in South Africa that's, most people would agree, is a real challenging space for small businesses. And so I'm looking at you and going, here's a track record of solid success.
A track record of can do.
And make it happen. So my question to you is, you're one of the people that I can hold up and say, this is somebody who's done it and has got this far. And my question to you is, you're living in the space, you're here with the rest of us as business owners. How do you see your way through the current economic climate and the current economic environment? What are you doing as a business person that you can turn around and say, look, these are some of the generic things or some of the things, my thoughts that I'm applying right now? You know, I'm hearing, and we hear it all the time, you know, you hear the words get thrown out, the radical economic transformation, fees must fall, we're being downgraded, we're junk, we're this, we're that. And I'm going, well, that's all fine and well, people, that's all out there. But as a business person right now, what does this mean for me? And what am I going to do differently tomorrow that I'm not doing today that's going to make a difference? What are you going to be doing?
What am I going to be doing? I will be applying my knowledge to empower other entrepreneurs, because as much as we can speak of, you know, obviously we're not just speaking of a downgrade, it's a reality. We are in junk status mode right now. But it is sometimes in the times of desperation that opportunity is created. And so instead of looking at it as being an absolute desperate space to be in, I'm looking at how I can play my role in ensuring that entrepreneurs begin to contribute meaningfully towards the economy, and that we don't necessarily need, you know, you look at, for instance, the growth of entrepreneurship in South Africa amongst black people has declined since 1994 based on the fact that so much was made more accessible from grants to, you know, access to so many other opportunities. And whereas when you look at the youth of, you know, Eastern Africa, Western Africa, you find that they don't toy for services. Yeah, they don't wait for anybody to give them anything. Those young people sit down, they come up with a business plan and they drive it. And they don't expect government to deliver anything to them except for their own education.
Enterprise and culture.
And so what's my contribution? Through the Enterprise Supply Development Program that we've started with a consultancy, we're actually looking to help entrepreneurs to stand up and be strong and be counted and become even more innovative in how they grow their businesses. Obviously, it helps to grow my business in the process, but I'm looking at a totally different niche altogether. And it doesn't mean that I've forsaken the business model of the past 15 years, but it means I'm evolving and I'm now responsive. Where is the next growth of our economy going to come from? It's going to come from entrepreneurs, but we need to support them. We need to be able to give them, you know, the right skill set, the tools. We also need to be able to facilitate access to funding at a much more, you know, a less more cumbersome method, so to speak, because that is increasingly a barrier to entry for young people. But also coming up with innovative ways of saying you don't necessarily need capital to start the business. Maybe we can identify strategic partners for you so that you're able to, you know, get into the market space and you still have the right type of mentorship and the guidance to grow that business. So I'm not feeling a dark cloud over my head right now, if anything, because I've set a very kind of like extensive goal for the business to say, are we actually reaching our target? And that is, we have had to relook our model to ensure that we are not public sector driven and focused and dependent, to moving our emphasis and focus into the corporate space. And so through this journey of networking and understanding what is needed in terms of how we can drive the growth of our economy in South Africa, we came across PricewaterhouseCoopers, and we have a standing joint venture with them, and we have been fortunate to deliver a youth development program on behalf of the Gauteng province called Tsepo 500,000.
Okay.
And that has also led to other opportunities. So we look at how we can do one prototype in the province, how do we extend this and replicate it across the province. So I say to people, there is enough money in the world. The only thing you need to figure out is how to get it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. And I'm also hearing you saying that there's no need to compete with anyone. It's like you grow when everyone else grows.
I was going to say, I think the one thing that strikes me, and I mean, I often say to people, what's the one thing that you would, you know, you would share with people that you wish you now know that you wish you'd known, say, 20 years back? But if I listen to you, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to give you something that I'm observing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an absolutely amazing ability to collaborate with others. You've spent a lot of time here today talking about other people and how you help other people and work with other people and how other success creates success for you as an individual. And I think that's something that's just so missing in the world today, that everybody is in the, you know, we often talk about the, you know, win-win scenarios and people use that terminology, but it's actually not win-win. It's actually about, because win-win implies that there's, you know,
there's
a trade-off. It's about success for all. And I think you've clearly got that right. And that's something that I think is admirable. It really does shape the way the world moves from a success perspective.
Thank you so much for that. But I'd like to believe that we've only just begun.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the way in which we grow our businesses as entrepreneurs is going to be influenced even more so in the future by how effectively and how well we collaborate and integrate our offerings with other entities, and you start to look at other businesses as partners as opposed to competition.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for instance, I'm having a meeting, I think, next week with one of the major eventing companies in the country, but they don't have a PR division. And I'm like, why don't we just collaborate? Mm. Let's work together when we can. And, you know, always understanding that from where I stand, I always look at life as, you know, being an opportunity to live abundantly. So if you operate from a premise of abundance, you will get more because you can give more and get more. So it's constantly being replenished. Scarcity is not something I identify with because it reduces your ability to grow and it stunts you to a point where you're actually paralyzed from just not even being able to think beyond the doorstep. Mm. You're so focused on not having something. I focus on having it and having it all.
Awesome.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Lundini, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your time. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform. CliffCentral.com.